You are now listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans, with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart.
And here we are, episode 14. I've just managed to spill water all over my desk. Ooh, thankfully, it didn't go in the laptop.
That's right. Otherwise, there'd be hell to pay.
Well,
you can hear that. Oh, shrimp of essence.
Yes.
Bubbly water.
I'd be in a great mood for a podcast if I just tipped water in my brand new laptop. But yes, so I've just literally wiped the table with my hand and then wiped it all over myself because I didn't have anything sitting here to wipe it up with.
Could have got Charlie to lick the water off.
Note to self.
Yes.
Podcast studio, need to have a towel on hand just in case there's a water accident.
Yes.
You know.
It's a good idea.
I mean, there is my gig jacket in the background, which you suggested I could wipe it up with, which probably would improve the smell. Let's face it. I think that jacket might need a wash.
I can smell it from here.
And that is a beautiful segue.
It is.
Into kicking off today's podcast by chatting about the gig we had last Friday night.
So it was last Friday night, yeah.
You know, obviously you're hearing this Friday or beyond. Don't know what the date is on Friday, but anyway.
Well, it was...
But we record on a Tuesday and the previous Friday when
today is Tuesday the 4th of April. The 31st of March was when the gig was on.
Yeah. We played a gig the night the High Rent episode came out. There you go.
Yeah.
That's the way to look at it. It was all right.
And yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we were supporting
That's the end of our review. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, on to the next thing. No, we were supporting a band called Richter, and of course, you know, they are a quality unit. Otherwise, we wouldn't be supporting them.
And a friend of the podcast.
Darren Zaza. And inaugural guest.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
First
trying
cab
to spit
off
the syllables
rank
out of my brain. Yeah, so he's the guitarist in Richter.
Yeah.
But yeah, and they got a bit of a – you should check them out. They got a bit of an 80s vibe, I describe it as.
A bit.
Okay, they've got a massive 80s vibe.
Massive 80s vibe, which is one of the reasons why they're so cool.
They don't look like they're going to – when you see them on stage, you're kind of thinking like just thinking a bit of rock, kind of something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
Looks like Aussie pub rock.
It looks like they're going to pump out a bit of Matchbox 20 or something like that.
Yeah. Or, you know, I don't know, just...
Bruce Springsteen, maybe.
Yeah. And then...
They've got the working class vibe about them.
And then the keyboard and sax comes in and you're just going to go... Oh,
80s.
It's, yeah. Yeah. they started off sounding a bit Dire Straits in the first
song. Ask them to do the first 16 bars of Careless Whisper for their sound check. And they looked at me with the eyes of fuck off. But the sound guy had a bit of a laugh about it. That was pretty cool.
I think
Randall, the sax player, would be able to play a pretty mean Careless Whisper. But he was sporting, before he tied his hair back, he was sporting a bit of a Kenny G fro.
Oh, no.
As well.
He was. I assumed he was just leaning into that. but I found it hysterical when you said that. But yeah, so they get a bit of an 80s vibe and I mean, they were basically showing off some tracks they've been working on, and it was they put on a good show, and we warmed the room up for them.
Yeah. Well, I think we warmed it up pretty well.
Oh yeah, no, it was good as always.
Well, the sound was great. The sound was good. I found the sound really good. Because if the sound on stage is really good, and I know that I don't have to work my voice too hard because I'm trying
yourself
to hear above everything else,
then
it's, you just go in there with more confidence. And you know what we were playing, it was pretty spot on. But the harmonies, I just felt the harmonies really, you know, our harmonies just really clicked, and that was one of the main pieces of feedback that I got from people were, you know, your harmonies are just so spot on, which is, you know, pretty much what we do. You know, it's almost like It's almost like the music that we play is just, it's just there to enable the harmonies to stick out.
Yeah.
Because there's not enough I've said this before, there's not enough harmonies in pop music.
Really. No, I mean, unless you're talking, unless you're talking the kind of boy band stuff, you know, that kind of thing, or girl band, I guess.
I'm talking about stuff with real instruments. And
yeah, yeah, I know, but that's what I mean. It's like, unless you're talking that stuff where it's
true.
Their thing is, and it's important to remember that with those bands, like, you know, the MacBook's working overtime to auto-tune those vocals. And make them sound, one, like they can sing, and two, in the same key. And that's no offense. I mean, like, I always mental blank on his name. The guy from One Direction.
Harry Styles.
I mean, Harry Styles has, you know, developed into a real talent and a you know, great entertainer and all sorts of things. But his audition when he first, I mean, we've spoken about it before, I think, his audition when he first, you know, auditioned for UK's Got Talent or whichever one it was.
Yeah, Britain's Got Talent.
Was dog shit.
Or was it The X Factor?
Oh, no. It was one of those.
One of those.
It was awful, you know. So, but he has matured into a talent and some of those people do. But, yeah, I mean, I guess with us there isn't any kind of, there's nothing to hide behind.
No.
And I think people kind of, I guess, appreciate that it's, you know, as you say, there's not a lot of it around. You go and see a lot of even duos that play covers, and so often it'll be a girl singing and a guy playing guitar, mm-hmm. and he doesn't sing any backing vocals, and she probably doesn't play an instrument.
Yep.
So she can sing, and because she doesn't play an instrument, she needs somebody to accompany her. So
there's basically two people doing the job of one person that could sing and play at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. So you don't get a lot of duos where the harmonies are front and center.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I describe that my guitar playing in general as being my voice is my thing and my guitar playing is there to support it. And, you know, obviously you're, and it's, I make no secret of it, I mean, you're a higher standard musician than I am, and I don't have any problem with that. But, you know, you obviously play bass and you play a bit of keyboard and, you know, you've just got a lot more runs on the board in that sense. But, you know, when we come together, it's, again, like you said, it's kind of the vocals are, you know, I mean, your voice, you know, again, you know, I always say to people, it's just like, if they say, what does the other guy do? If I'm at a gig, they're like, what does the other guy do? And I go, oh, well, he can do exactly what I'm doing here. He's a singer-songwriter himself, amazing voice. And when we're together, it's the harmonies that is the big thing.
Mm.
And, I guess that sets us apart, I guess, compared to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that we do, I want to mention the cows in a minute from last week. One thing that we do, again, that isn't just harmonies is what I kind of describe as a counter melody. You know, you'll sing a line over the top of a line that I'm singing rather than just harmonising with the line that I'm singing.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that sets us apart as well, is that you've got this, you know, these two things going on at certain points in songs as well. So you've kind of got a mix of that.
Well, it's the thing that, you know, we're wanting to sort of develop a bit more of, because you know, you and I both know that that would be a great way to set us apart from everybody else, is sort of the vocal interplay within the songs. But, it was...
And that was what a lot of the feedback was.
Yes, you know, I think absolutely.
That, I mean, they commented on... they commented a lot of things. I mean, I obviously got comments on my jacket, which is, you know, a bit out there, but people were saying, you guys look, you know, you look the part. You look like you're up there to perform and you put on a great show and you kind of... It was really entertaining, and you know, just the interplay with the crowd, which is, you know, in between the two of us, is something that we kind of pride ourselves on.
I must admit, I felt more relaxed up there than I did at the Fringe.
Yeah,
But I think, that's because of, you know, circumstances. You know, it was in front of, you know, it was in front of a lot more people. The people that we knew, but there was a lot of people that we didn't know either. It was a more intimate space. You know,
I think there was a lot of unknowns at the Fringe as well.
Yeah,
it was the first time you and I had stepped out on stage, obviously with a new look. You know, that anybody could kind of, you know, it was a Fringe show. Anybody can kind of walk in, and who's out there in the crowd? You couldn't really see the crowd.
It was a really big space to fill. Even if all the seats were taken, it was still quite a cavernous area compared to the Jade. But that's not a criticism or anything like that. It's just the vibe. The vibe was different. And
I mean, I felt more relaxed on Friday night than I did at the Fringe, because it's just I think the thing with the Fringe is you build it up as being a fairly substantial thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there was things I liked more about the Fringe than Friday night. I mean, I had more room to move at the Fringe. Like,
true.
You know, I had a keyboard rack to my left, where if I moved my guitar neck too much, I was going to hit that. I had a drum stand kind of sticking out behind me.
Yeah.
Where if I moved back too much, I'd kind of knock into that. You know, so I was a little bit restricted on kind of freedom of movement. So there's always swings and roundabouts. But,
sure.
I mean, there was no. I think the other thing is that the thing with the Fringe is we're the show.
Yeah.
And at this gig, it was like we were sharing that with another band, and it wasn't kind of all on us. Mm-hmm. There's also a little bit of camaraderie with that. I mean, you know the guys in Rector better than I do. Like even Darren, I guess you play with him for many years, but you know, I know Darren. Didn't know the other guys well, although I've seen Richter play before.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a bit of camaraderie while you're sound checking and you're chatting, and, you know, so it's a different vibe leading into it, whereas the Fringe is kind of there's another show going on, and then they pack up and you rush out on stage and you're like rush. So it's a different vibe. I mean, it's always going to be so vastly different.
Yeah, I mean, comparing that show with the Fringe show is like comparing, you know, hammers with apples. You know, they're so vastly different. You can eat one and you can bang the nail in with another, and that's it. You know,
An apple to the head is one thing. A hammer to the head, not so good.
No, it would hurt a lot more. But it was just good to you know, get the love from the crowd and get that response. Which sort of vindicated to us that, you know, what we're putting together is cool, you know, and it's always good to get that response, that feedback, whether it is, you know, overtly put to you and, you know, someone's telling you what they think, or covertly, you know, through applause and, you know, just a good general vibe that's coming to you from the audience to the stage.
Yeah. I mean, there was plenty of there was a huge amount of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
I mean, when we played, and obviously when Richter played as well, you know, there was a couple of guys down the front who every time we kind of got to, you know, often you have a song and there'll be a moment in a song where it suddenly just lifts, you know, there's that moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a guy there was just like whistling, and just every time we got to a moment in the song, and you could almost tell he's going to whistle in a set because the moment's coming up, you know. And
well, I thought you knew them.
Well, the funny thing is you thought I knew them. I spoke to somebody else in the crowd and I said, oh, what about those guys down the front? They're going, hang on, you didn't know them? And I go, no, didn't know them from a bar of soap. And yeah, I don't know. They just were there for a bit. I don't know if they were there later on. They weren't in the same place later on. So I don't know whether they just kind of wandered in and went, yeah, let's check out this. Yeah. And then, you know, paid some money at the door and came in for a bit or what. But so there was that. And then obviously when you're hanging around afterwards and Richter are playing, you know, a lot of people, you know, just kind of tap you on the shoulder as you're kind of walking through the crowd and give you a thumbs up or,
yeah.
just cool. scream at you through the noise that they enjoyed it. So, and that's kind of, I guess, a bit of a, well, another segue, I guess, into kind of what we were thinking of just extending this podcast with was wanting to be acknowledged as a creative, a writer, a performer. And I guess it applies to, other, creative exploits as well.
I think all creative exploits have that thing about it that I think it's inherent in all creativity is that, the need for an audience, the need for, that relationship between the creator and the audience, irrespective of what it is you're creating, that sort of feedback is really, really important. I think we had touched on it a little bit, I suppose, because I remember sort of, us waxing lyrical about, if a song is written but no one hears it, does it actually exist?
And if a song's written in the forest.
If a song is written in the forest and the tree falls on the recording equipment, does it actually exist? But it got me thinking about, creativity is something that needs to be shared.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, if somebody says, I don't care. I mean, I know people who've learned how to sing and they just did it so if somebody grabs a guitar out at, they went and had singing lessons. Mm-hmm. And they said, I don't want to perform. I just want to be able to sing. If somebody grabs a guitar out by the campfire or, there's a piano in the house and somebody can play it, that I can maybe sing, and sound half decent and sing a song. Yeah. And they just want to do it for that reason. If you enjoy doing something creative, painting, knitting, making weird looking jackets like my one here.
Macrame.
Whatever. Yeah. If you enjoy doing something hobby creative.
Techs.
Sorry, what?
Hobby techs.
Yeah. Like, there's anything.
That's going back a few years. Anyway.
If you want to do anything just for yourself that you just enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
That is fine. You're just a technically an amateur, somebody, a hobbyist.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with being a hobbyist musician. I think there's, but there's a big gap between, that and a professional. And if you want to be a professional creative in whatever the field is, then you ultimately have to make money out of it. Otherwise unless you've won the lottery.
Well, that's the element of being professional, isn't it? You're getting paid for it.
Well, people have often said to me for years, are you a professional musician? And I go, well, attitude-wise, yeah. I'm not yet making a living out of it, but I consider myself professional. Mm. A professional versus professional, So
yeah.
I've always considered myself professional from literally when I started and started with playing kind of gigs.
Mm.
It was always like...
The word professional has morphed into, an attitudinal thing rather than just a purely financial definition. But I wonder if that's actually, sort of technically correct.
That many words have changed definition. So the dictionary definition probably has, both.
Yeah.
The meaning of words changes all the time.
Sure.
Different if you look back in really controversial words have changed meaning because they get used to racist, for example. The original meaning of the word racist was the ability to tell the difference between two races.
Mm.
So by that terminology, I think most people are probably racist.
Yeah.
Because if you can tell the difference between, the terminology changes. So I would think that professional has probably evolved slightly.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, and I think there's, you can have a very casual and amateur attitude, or you can have a very professional attitude about something. So yeah, but I mean, I think if you, I mean, you have to find your audience. You have to get it out there one way or another, get your kind of product out there. And I think as a creative person who's, you know, trying to do that, you know, you want to know you kind of matter. And I think as a songwriter, maybe at least I guess from my perspective, I probably think of it as you kind of maybe want to make a difference. You know, you want people to hear the song and it kind of touches them, you know, in a non-Rolf Harris kind of way. it touches them emotionally. If you're just tuning into this podcast, it's a bit like this most of the time.
But it's mostly coming out of my mouth, not yours.
It is. That's why I thought I'm going to take this thing off road. Just the road bent enough there, and I just went, I'm going straight ahead.
No.
But I think the way I broke it down was, you know, bad feedback can be bad. Good feedback is good, but no feedback is devastating.
Mm.
And it's like, so somebody could have come up on the gig on Friday night and gone, and when I say bad feedback, I mean, you could put that under the category of maybe constructive criticism. I mean, it can be bad if somebody's just
constructive criticism is still good though.
No, I was going to say, if somebody's being
put forward,
bad is, you know, I completely discount, I don't even consider probably bad things as being bad, at least for me, because I just ignore them. I got no time, you know. Yeah. If you don't like it, that's fine. It's like not everybody likes the Beatles. Doesn't mean it doesn't mean you're right. And obviously, even if it's critical, I guess, the feedback are probably the way to look at it, or could be perceived as slightly negative. You can always kind of flip that and learn from it, I guess, is mm-hmm. probably the way I'm looking at it. But if you don't get anything at all, you know, if we played that gig on Friday night and nobody clapped at the end of the songs, you're kind of like,
I'd be saying to myself, oh, this is exactly like the Slug and Lettuce at Parafield Gardens.
Am I playing a pub?
Am I playing in a pub? Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that was a really good thing about, about Friday night, is we've just come off the back of the Fringe and Wombad, and you think that a lot of people are gigged out or just performanced out or just, you know, and maybe it's the opposite. Maybe in actual fact, people are, you know, in the mindset of, hey, I just saw a bunch of stuff at the Fringe and, hey, this is good stuff too, you know. But, yeah, it was just nice to kind of have people there who were really, like, getting into some original music.
Yeah.
As I said, not getting the feedback is probably the worst thing of all.
Yeah, getting the silent treatment from the audience is pretty gut wrenching.
Yeah,
yeah,
and I think and it's easier in some places than others. Adelaide versus anywhere else, pretty much.
Yeah.
Adelaide's a pretty challenging town.
I've played in places where, you know, they just don't clap at all, and yet when you're packing up to go, it's like, you have a lineup of people telling you, yeah, that was really good.
Yeah.
But they won't give you any indication at all while you're on stage. And they'll tell you, they'll hold you up at the end though, while you're packing up, and tell you. I always find that weird. I always find that really weird. I think it's a geographical thing.
It's funny actually. We've spoken about it before, I think, but I think Australians are very bad at acknowledging a performer in general, and when I was in Ireland, it was just completely the opposite. You know, everybody would clap at every gig, and there was a venue, the name escapes me, it's not the same name now, but I played it again with Brendan Keane, who I played with when I was in Ireland the first time. I played it a gig there with him again in I'm trying to think what year it was 2016, 17, something like that, when I went over, played a gig in Germany and played a gig in Ireland. And we played this venue, but when we played it once back when I was living over there, we played it on a regular basis and everybody would go mental. And it's this little skinny venue. You walk in the front door, we're right there, and then there's the bar and, you know. And we played one gig there and nobody clapped the entire night. And we're like up the front just going, what the fuck is going on? Like, this is just ridiculous. This is, it's like we've been teleported to another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we played the gig and then we finished and we packed up and we were standing out the front. And people started coming out and I was just going, you guys were fucking epic. Like, just, oh my God, best night of our lives. And we're going, where the fuck were you when we were playing? Like, why weren't you clapping? It's like, we want to get another gig here. And it's just like, you know, but it was just one of these really weird nights where nobody clapped, but everybody had an amazing time.
Mm.
And that, you know, in an Irish setting is really weird. In an Adelaide setting, that'd be much more the norm. But over there, it was just kind of like it was Twilight Zone shit.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, I it's funny, I've said it at gigs. The first time I said it, I said, you know, I got to the end of a song or whatever and people were clapping and I said, I really appreciate you clapping. Thanks so much for that. This is like a pub gig. And I said, you got to understand how much that means to musicians to have some applause. I said, we're kind of like, you know, Energizer bunnies that run on a bit of applause. And I I have explained this since, you know, I've done this, but, you know, there's a movie called Monsters, Inc., where the monster's world is run on the screams of children and, you know, fills up these canisters with the energy from the screams, but then they work out that if the kids laugh, the canisters just, you know, explode and they've got to have bigger canisters because laughing is worth more energy in their world. And I go, it's kind of like that. Like we just get, if you really clap, it's like we're just exploding with energy. It's a huge kind of adrenaline rush. But I said to the audience at this gig, you know, even if the guy is not that good, you know, even if they're not the best musician in the world, you know, if it's, you know, give them a bit of applause. You know, they'll really appreciate it. And then I played a song and then halfway through the song I thought, they clapped me. What if they went to another gig and the guy that they were listening to said, if you go along to a performance and the guy is not that good, still clap.
Mm.
And so I got to the end of the song and I told them that. It's kind of like, I just had a realization that you might have just been clapping because somebody else told you, even if he's not great, give him a little bit of a clap.
Yeah.
And there I'm thinking it's, they love me. You know, they think I'm brilliant and really they're just clapping because they're thinking, oh, that other guy was told us we should clap, even the bad ones.
Yeah, I don't know if that's probably the best advice that you would give an audience. you know, because in the back of my mind, you know, when you were saying that, I'm thinking, oh, no, don't clap the bad guy. You just encourage him. You know, and it's like,
yeah, but the thing is that we were all not that great at some point. I mean,
that is true. That is absolutely true. But we didn't have.
You might have always been great.
You know, we waited until we were of some quality before we actually went out and performed to an audience. You know, and some people are not backwards in going forwards and. You know, going out and performing when they're not ready to.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, my theory is if you're sitting in a venue and the performer is that shit, you should leave the venue. If he's not so bad, if he's good enough that you're happy to sit there, then he can't be.
Well, I suppose you know, not good in a, compared to what? Compared to who? Like,
yeah, I'm just thinking if you're still sitting there, you know, then you know. Give him some encouragement.
What if you happen to meet someone and you have to sit there because
that's what mobile phones are for.
Maybe it's a blind date,
no.
You know, and you're sitting there with a crimson top and a hat or something like that. You know, so So your blind date can recognise you.
I've had the blind date. I've not necessarily known that. But I've.
This is not me trying to drive the conversation another direction.
No, I was going to say
the bait, and you're running with.
I was just going to say. I mean, it's one of those funny things is that as a performer, you take in all of the audience. I don't know if you do, but I mean, obviously, it's interesting. Like, you know, you get different people doing different things, but I mean, they say, you know, perform or talk to, you know, certain people.
Yeah.
But look around and see everybody, but gauge reaction on it, just a small selection of people.
Yeah.
The thing with pub gigs is I have seen people where you're just kind of going, you're playing songs and you're looking around and you're seeing everything that's kind of going on. You're going, that's definitely a blind date.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'll be careful when I give those people a card. I don't want to kind of feel like I'm treading on any toes here.
Yeah.
But it's always one of the funny things to watch that kind of play out.
Didn't look like there was any of that going on at the Jade on the Friday night.
No. Friday night was great. I mean, we finished playing the gig and there was some people who'd kind of rocked up towards the end, and we were just packing up some gear and putting it off to the side, and there was some people who'd kind of standing where we were going to put our gear, and I just want to chuck the gear up here. I said, we just played in the previous band. And some of the people had missed us because they'd kind of come in later. And there was a girl there, rather attractive young girl. And I had some cards and, I said, we played earlier, you know, have a card or whatever. And she was like, do you want me to hand out some cards?
Right, okay.
And the funny thing is she's going around handing out cards.
She came up to me and handed me a card. And
she was just handing them to everybody.
I went, thank you so much. And I took the card and I said, see that guy there in the card? And she goes, oh, yeah. And I said, that's me. She goes, oh, so you probably don't need these cards then. I said, no, I've got a stack of them at home. But I'll take a couple anyway because maybe I'll hand them out to somebody. And she goes, oh, okay, no worries. I said, well, thank you so much for what, you know, for what you're doing.
Yeah, she gave them to my wife and my parents, kids.
Yeah.
And I said, you could have said you didn't need one. And they're like, but I was just happy that.
She was so nice.
She was so enthusiastic to hand out some cards. And it's like, you know, they're the kind of people we need.
Either she really liked it or she was microdosing on some fucking drug or something.
I have no idea.
Maybe she was on an ecchi. I don't know.
I had no judgment on these people.
No, she was just having a great time. She wanted to get that momentum happening. So,
yeah, I mean, no idea. But anyway, she was happy to hand out cards.
Good on her.
Getting back to the topic of,
well, I mean, you know,
I was going to say it's
recognition.
But I was going to say it also exists in the space of, you know, online content as well, which I think is, I mean, it can be, you know, we get bombarded with so much stuff and it's sometimes hard to kind of, you know, you could spend all day liking and commenting on stuff. I think that, and it's not that we base our efforts or our, certainly you and I, don't base our existence on a serotonin hit or whatever from getting likes on posts.
Dopamine,
whatever. Yep, that one. I was trying to think.
The serotonin is, anyway.
No,
it's related. It's related.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's certainly people who are. But what I would say is that even though we don't base our existence on that, it's nice to kind of see those, that engagement, see that acknowledgement, get those interactions, you know, and it's like if you, if you're out there listening to this or you hear this and you're, you know, I mean, a little bit like I was saying, you know, if you've got an artist, you like, I was going to say, like I said, you know, clap the up and comers, but if you've got an artist that you like their stuff and they're at the lower level, I mean, Ed Sheeran doesn't need any more shares of his content. You know, he's good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's got enough momentum. I think he's going to be fine.
So what you're saying, find some other short dumpy ranger to share his or her music with.
I'm just, you know,
I don't believe I just said that.
Yeah. Well, there's a there's another one out there, but he's also already successful. He's not short, but you know, fits the other criteria. But it's a UK thing. But you know, yeah. But if you've got artists who you are following, who you think I actually really like that song,
yeah.
They're the ones who could really benefit. And this is, you know, obviously, you know, from our perspective, it's like we really benefit from, you know, continuous shares and reposting and even comments and likes on our content, because all of that just helps get a little bit more traction. It gives a chance for more people to see it and therefore more people to acknowledge it.
And I suppose on a personal note, I mean, you know, we had spoken about before, you know, the reasons why we write songs, the reasons why we create. And I think I've said in the past that it's not that much of a concern for me. I just write because I write. In saying that, you know, when you do get a response, when you do get feedback, I mean, I don't have a problem in, you know, writing and, you know, putting things out into the ether and, you know, for the sake of doing it. But after a while, you know, if you are putting something out and you'd like to get a response and there isn't a response coming back, I mean, it does play tricks on your mind, you know, as, you know, you start asking yourself, well, you know, is this worth it? And, you know, getting that feedback, getting that response, you know, getting that sort of acknowledgement that, yep, I've heard it, yep, sounds good, blah, 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 or, you know, whatever the response is, you know, it just, I suppose it points you in the right direction. You think to yourself, okay, well, I'm on the right track, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was going to say
that's a cool thing, because, you know, being social creatures, we are conditioned to communicate, we are conditioned to, you know, have conversations. We are conditioned to respond to whatever stimuli comes our way, you know, whether it be sort of, you know, physical or visual or oral. You know, so as the person who is creating something which is put out into the ether to be received by somebody else, that's where the creativity, you know, true creativity is something that needs to be shared, you know, getting that sort of feedback, you know, creating that loop between creator and audience is a really important thing, because it just creates its own energy, you know. It's enables the audience to really embrace life by, you know, hearing or seeing or feeling something that they that touches, moves and inspires. And as the creator, it gives you the impetus to keep on creating, because the essence of getting that feedback is what it's all about.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I was kind of sitting there, it's a bit of a guide in the sense that, and I don't, I mean, look, you can shape your career around, you know, reaction, if that makes sense. So you could have five songs and everybody likes this one, and you go, okay, I'm just going to write songs like that then, you know. You know, so you kind of, or, you know, people say if you do this, you know, it'll make you more successful. You can, people like to call that selling out, but it's just like, or it's called making a living. But, you know, you can, there's a bit of a blurred line there. But I think it's a guide in the sense that, you know, it that what you're doing is something. You know, the kind of going back to the Friday night thing is people going, you know, like people going, I just love the vibe. You've kind of got a great harmonies and, you know, some of the comments that I got, and I think you maybe got some similar ones, which was, you know, you're more than just a, like two guys with two guitars, your standard acoustic kind of songs, you know, just acoustic songs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're more than that. And, you know, you know, you look the part, you play the part, you've got to just more, you're more than just, oh, we just rocked up and played some tunes. And so when you kind of get that feedback, and it either guides you in a different direction or reinforces the direction you're taking, or it just clarifies some things for you that, like, okay, cool, all right, so what we're doing, that sounds good. Okay, we can, and you might go, okay, we can lean into this a little bit, or we can move this way a little bit. And it's like, it's not like saying something completely new.
Yeah.
It's just like you've given them kind of, you know, A, B, C, and D, and they go, oh man, A and B or whatever, absolutely love that. That, or you gauge from the crowd that, hey, that really worked.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, okay, again, and it just gives you some sort of extra guide or extra direction, that feedback. And I guess it's like going viral. You know, you put something online and it's kind of like, okay, that went really well. I wonder why, you know. And it's not necessarily that you're chasing you know, the viral thing in the first place. You're not like going, oh, what should we do? What will go viral? Well, if we do this, it'll go, might go viral because somebody else did something similar.
Mm.
But if you're just doing your thing and something gets a little bit of traction, then it's, again, just continued acknowledgement that, hey, we like this kind of stuff. And you go, yeah, okay. And so I think that, you know, Friday night was great in that sense, that it was kind of a reinforcement that, you know, almost that we just, excuse me, we just need to do more of kind of what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, just you know, ramp everything up, enhance what we've already got.
Yeah.
Rather than reinventing the wheel, it wasn't kind of like, oh, well, you know, it was okay.
Back to the drawing board.
Yeah, it was okay, but, you know, it didn't really grab me. It was just like, it was overwhelming, gushing support.
I mean, you know, there was a big sort of inference of more, please.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
which is, you know, as someone who had part in creating the music that enabled that experience to happen, it was just really cool. It's like, okay, yep, we're on the right track. Yep, more please, more of that. Let's do it. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, and even the band, even the guys from Richter who hadn't seen us play before, and again, as I said, didn't really know me.
Yeah.
You know, to a man,
yeah, loved it.
All came up and was just like, "Oh my god, like amazing!" And
it's kind of like, I gotta say, I was, I didn't before doing the gig. I was just wondering how it was going to go. Not because I didn't feel that we would be able to pull anything off and not do a good job or anything like that, but just the fact that, you know, because I knew what Richter are and they're sort of pretty ball tearing. They're very, very groove oriented. They're very sort of they have a certain thing, they have a certain shtick, you know. And I felt not necessarily in a bad way or anything like that. I wasn't doubting, but I was just thinking to myself, this is going to be interesting.
You were wondering.
It's going to be interesting how this would fit. You know, would we be too, you know, in inverted commas, acoustic? You know, or would the fact that we were acoustic to their sort of bombastic sort of 80s shtick, you know, that comparison would work in our favour. And you know, thankfully it did. What we had put forward, it fitted in, you know.
Yeah.
It didn't stick out like a sore thumb. It contributed to a really, really good sort of live music experience from start to finish. Yeah. And, you know,
well, I mean,
I was glad of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. I remember playing, and I've probably spoken about this in the podcast as well, but, you know, my first gig was, you know, a first original set, 30 minutes between two thrash bands, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing is that...
Yeah, you couldn't get any more.
No, you couldn't get any opposite. More like, this is what the fuck's going on here. But literally the thrash band before me sat down and listened. The thrash band who were playing after we sat down and listened and literally came up and said, man, you just hang it all out there. We hide behind our amps.
Mm.
And it's just like, and they just clapped the entire time, cheered everything.
Yeah.
And I just went, you can put me on any, this is my first ever gig.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you put me on any bill, I don't care who else is on the bill and I can hold my own.
Yeah.
And I was thinking when you were saying that about the contrast, it's like, yeah, but if you look at a bill like Live Aid or something like that, where you've just got a whole mash of just artists who are just completely different.
Yeah.
If they're all good, then... they hold their own.
Yeah.
And it was just like...
Oh, well, I mean, we certainly did that. And I didn't think we wouldn't. It was, you know, it was more just, you know, sort of genres and stuff like that, you know.
Charlie trying to bring Charlie's an end to the podcast. Charlie, shush. Oh, this is probably my wife turning getting home. And he's just like, John, nah, this is the end of the podcast.
Okay.
We're calling it quits. Charlie...
Charlie, come on, mate.
We'll quieten him down and then we'll wrap this thing up anyway.
Come on, boy. Good boy. Everyone listening was thinking, oh, where's Charlie? Where's Charlie?
And he's here. Don't worry about that. He was asleep like on the cold concrete.
All right.
But, yeah, look, I mean, I know what you're saying though, because you kind of also go, there might be an audience there who are expecting like pop and then they get acoustic in it. But the thing is, I kind of go, good music is good music.
Good music is good music.
You rise above
you're
it.
You're absolutely right.
And we are good enough to hold our own in that environment and go, we don't care what you came here for. This is what you're getting and it's going to be good.
Yeah.
What I will say, shush, Charlie, we've got to wrap this up. It's a nice little tight one today, 47 minutes so far.
Beautiful.
But what I was going to say about the cows, we worked out the cows last week, they were probably having their babies taken away. Which is why they were so mooey, or they were having at least their mates taken away. So because just up here on the hill is a you know a loading ramp for loading the cows onto a trailer. So as Charlie sends us off, I won't say quietly into the night, with his normal level of enthusiasm. This has been episode 14.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll see you at a gig soon. Because it's fucking awesome. But thanks for listening.
We'll see you ciao next month. For now.
See ya.
Bye.
Charlie, do you want to have a last word?
Done.
See ya.
You have been listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart. Be sure to check out soultradermusic.com and CoreyStewartOnline.com. See you next week.